from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, local researchers think June's record-breaking heat wave is to blame for scores of dead mussels along the shores of Bodega Bay. They say it's rare to see marine life dying from hot coastal air. We learn more about the impact. Then we look at the biggest national news stories ahead of the July 4th holiday. A Department of Homeland Security Inspector General's report describes dangerous and inhumane conditions at border detention centers. And President Trump's 4th of July celebration is costing the National Park Service. It's diverting more than $2 million to help cover the costs of the event. Forum is next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. A mussel die-off in Bodega Bay was likely caused by June's heat wave, which, according to a European satellite agency, was the hottest June ever recorded on Earth. The effects of warming waters on marine life has been widely studied, but researchers say it's less common to see marine life dying from hot coastal air, as is suspected in this case. Joining me is Eric Simons. He's digital editor for the Bay Nature magazine. Good morning, Eric Simons.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. We also have Jackie Soans with us. She's the Bodega Marine Reserve Research Coordinator and also works with UC Davis. Good morning, Jackie Soans.
Good morning.
I want to start with you, Jackie Soans. When did you notice there was something wrong with the mussels? What did they look like to you?
Yeah, so I was approaching a study site on the Bodega Marine Reserve on June 18th, where we're monitoring sea stars, and immediately I could see that hundreds of mussels had died, and then later as I continued along the survey transect, realized that it was quite a significant impact, and thousands of mussels had died along a small stretch of shoreline.
And you have walked along this shoreline for more than a decade. Had you seen anything like this before?
No, I've been working here for about 15 years, and we have seen small mussel die-offs, you know, small patches in the intertidal zone, but nothing like this. This is definitely the most significant we've seen in the last 15 years.
Have you been able to isolate when this would have happened, or when the air temperature would have gotten so high that it would have caused this?
We believe it's likely that it was that June 9, 10, 11 period. The air temperatures, many people probably remember, they were far above normal. I think it was over 20 or 25 degrees higher than normal for that time of year. So we believe that those high air temperatures combined with midday low tides contributed to those mortalities.
So Eric Simons, how unique is it that it was the outside air temperature and not the ocean temperature that affected the mussels?
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of a big deal. And I think it's hard to say in some sense. We don't follow these as easily. I mean, it's harder, you know, with warming water. Sometimes you have a lot of lead time. You know when an El Nino is coming, you can set up. But when it's hot out, it's sort of unusual. And so there's been one of these that was seen actually right before Jackie arrived in Bodega in 2004. There was a mussel die-off. I talked to the researcher who studied that one, Christopher Harley. And, you know, I think that he was saying, we see that one, there may be others, but to know how widespread these are, how often they are, is still a little bit tricky.
I'll have to admit, you know, having an air temperature that's warmer than about 75 degrees or so doesn't sound incredibly high. So how is it that that air temperature was able to affect these mussels so badly?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, a lot of us were going to the beach because it's only 75 there, right? And it's cool. But you have to remember that for the mussels and for all the other stuff living on these rocks, it's not really the air temperature. It's the temperature of the rock, the temperature of the surface that they're on. So a 75-degree day, the rock can be 100 degrees or 105 degrees, and the mussels are trying to vent that hot air. They're trying to get rid of it, but there's no breeze. This sea breeze that we usually get is gone. It's just still, and so they just sit and they cook.
Don't mussels, Jackie Soans, have a way of dealing with this? I mean, Eric Simons is describing the venting process, but it's not like there aren't hotter months than the month of June for the coast.
That's correct. Usually, you know, we see quite warm air temperatures in late summer and early fall. However, the timing of the low tides is different. Hmm. And also, there some aspect to this might be related to the shock of an extreme, you know, heat day where, you know, there's nothing leading up to that. All of a sudden, you just have super high temperature and the animals aren't prepared for it, you know. Yes, we do have warmer air temperatures at other times of year, but the shock of that extreme temperature in the spring during a midday low tide event can be pretty severe.
And again, we're talking with Jackie Soans. She is the Marine Reserve Research Coordinator at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory. And Eric Simons, he's digital editor for Bay Nature Magazine. And I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. They're with us for a half hour. What are your questions about the causes and impacts of a mussel die-off that we're hearing about in Bodega Bay? What are your questions for our guests? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, on Facebook, on Twitter at KQED Forum, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Eric Simons, do you have a sense of how widespread these deaths are? Like if you had to say where the northernmost point was that's related to this heat wave from June to the southernmost point, I mean, how far did it go?
Well, I'm not sure that we know. And, you know, Jackie and I talked about this. She got some reports, I think, from as far north as Fort Bragg. You know, some people who had sort of been out, you know, responded to this. But I think part of the problem is you have to really have been out there around these weeks to have seen this. And you have to have a little bit known what you were looking for. You know, one of the sort of unfortunate things, there was a study going on for quite a while where they had sensors out in the mussel beds to track the temperatures up and down the West Coast. That study ran out of money 2 years ago, so they weren't out right now. So in some sense, you know, it's a little bit fortunate even that Jackie was out and noticed and saw this. It takes these sort of these observers who are out and are paying attention and know what they're seeing to make sense of this and to know how widespread it was.
And Jackie Soans, give us a sense of just how important mussels are to the marine ecosystem.
Yeah, so, you know, mussels are amazing. They're a very important foundation species. So that's similar to the trees in a forest or kelp in a kelp forest or corals on a coral reef. You know, these animals provide a lot of habitat and shelter for many different animals. In the case of mussel beds, if you look at one particular site, you might find over 300 different species living within the mussel bed. Hmm. So they're a critical species along the shoreline.
And how is the mussel population doing overall? I mean, do we need to redouble our efforts to help stabilize this population?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, it's interesting. You know, mussel beds actually do experience some disturbances. You know, say a driftwood log, you know, comes in during a storm and removes a patch of mussels. So they experience some natural disturbances like that. The interesting aspect of that is that it might take 4 or 5 years or more to recover from that disturbance. So that happens, you know, and we see those successional stages. In the mussel bed recovering. But what we're concerned about is if you had multiple extreme heat events, mm-hmm. and, you know, if the frequency of these increases over time, then the likelihood, you know, or the recovery of the mussel bed would be more difficult. You know, it would take longer.
You're mentioning the frequency of these occurring over time, increasing. And I mentioned at the top that you know, European leaders were saying that this was the hottest June ever recorded on Earth and that climate change made the record-breaking heat wave in Europe 5 times as likely to happen. So do you think that this June heat wave, Eric Simons, is a result of climate change?
I mean, it makes it more likely, certainly. So I think that's the part of this where going forward, you essentially have this bad luck event, right, that the low tide was during the middle of the day when it was really hot outside. and that that's what baked them and killed them. I mean, these are animals that, you know, if this happened some other time when the low tide was at 4 a.m, it wouldn't have been a problem. So climate change makes it more likely that you get heat waves earlier in the season. Even in March and in April, there have been recorded die-offs at that time, because that's when, you know, out at the coast, it's not that's sort of before the fog season starts. It can be a little warmer during the day. And there's some daytime low tides. So it's this combination. It just makes it more likely that you see this more often.
Well, this listener writes, this is a bad omen and a terrible sign for more and more runaway deadly global warming. Let me go to our calls. Matthew in Berkeley, start us off. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, yeah. I'm an avid abalone diver, but as you may know, over the past few years, the abalone season has been canceled due to urchin blight. I know it's not related to the mussels, but any idea when abalone might become legal again?
Jackie Soans?
I wish I knew that answer. You know, we're all sort of hopeful, and there are many researchers here, you know, exploring options for, you know, potential kelp restoration that will benefit the abalone. I think if I remember right, they've officially closed the season, right, for at least 2 more years. It's either 1 or 2 until 2020 or 2021. So we're still in this stage where, you know, there are a lot of unknowns, and we're doing our best to try to understand it and to think about, you know, if there are actions we can take to improve the situation for abalone.
Well, thanks, Matthew. And we go to more calls. And again, that number, 866-733-6786. Email address, forum at kqed.org. Our website, Facebook, and Twitter handle at KQED Forum are all places where you can reach us. Let's go next to Timothy in San Jose. Hi, Timothy.
Yes, I wondered if there's any comment and thinking about the lack of discussion about some of these die-offs all along the West Coast, from the whales on down, whether it's actually harmful activities of foreign military off the coast or foreign fishing fleets and commercial ships that are just dumping all their sewer water as they approach the West Coast.
Timothy, thanks. Eric Simons, when you've interviewed researchers, have they brought this up?
I mean, I think we considered a number of different things it could have been, but the fact that it was really hot and these all look like they died of heat stress seems pretty conclusive.
Well, that said, you have couched or qualified this event as believed to have been caused by hot temperatures. So could it have been anything else? What else could it be?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of different causes you see for die-offs in animals like this. I mean, it can be, you know, in the bay when there's too much rain, when the water is too fresh, you see oysters die. You know, we see at the coast low oxygen events where, especially in the tide pools, because they can change so quickly. You know, the oxygen can get sucked out of those pretty fast. They can acidify, something like that. But for a number of reasons, because of the timing, because of the pattern, because of what Jackie saw, the way the mussels are still attached to the rock, the tissue is still inside of them, the way they're sort of cracked like that, it really looks more like heat stress. For these researchers that study, you know, heat stress in animals, this is what it looks like rather than disease or low oxygen or some other sort of cause of death.
I have to admit, in listening to you talk about this perfect storm of high temperature, low tide, it doesn't sound like an unusual kind of thing that could happen. It sounds like it's so possible for this to happen later on in the season. And I'm struck by a quote you have in your reporting from a researcher that basically says there's an optimal temperature where organisms do their best, and it's really close to the temperature where they crash.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty fascinating. And he was saying he had studied this in lobsters in the Gulf of Maine, even, where you know, as the water warms, they actually do a little bit better. So it looks incredibly healthy out there. This ecosystem is flourishing. And unfortunately, the temperature at which they're doing great is really close to the temperature at which they're very suddenly not. And just everything crashes. So you see lobsters sort of migrating up the coast of the East Coast as the water's warming, with sort of long-term climate change. And then they sort of boom for a little bit, as they are right now in the Gulf of Maine. And then people there are very concerned, as this researcher was saying. He's worried that what you'll see is this boom is the prelude to a sudden crash as the lobsters keep going and, you know, go up to Canada.
Mm. because those Maine lobsters were from New York.
They used to be, right.
Well, Stephen asks, what is the estimated percentage of mussels that died off in the beds observed? Jackie Soans?
Yeah, so I actually went out this past weekend to do some surveys to estimate mortality rates. And I'm still in the process of collecting that data and analyzing it, but I can give you a rough idea. In the upper parts of the mussel bed, we're seeing an average of about 30% mortality. Some of the plots, you know, the plots range from between 5% and over 70% mortality.
Well, thanks for that question, and I'll go next to Ben in Davis. Hi, Ben.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. Fascinating discussion. I know that oysters, other bivalves like oysters, are especially important up in the Bodega Bay and Somalis region for local economy, tourism, et cetera. And I was wondering if these warmer air temperatures and possibly the warmer water and ocean acidification that goes along with this might be affecting them abnormally at this time, too.
Jackie Soans?
That's a good question. I have not spoken to the oyster researchers yet, so I need to follow up with them and see if they're seeing impacts in Somalis Bay. I wouldn't be surprised. As he's mentioned, there have been warm water impacts on oysters in the past, and probably warm air temperatures too. So we need to follow up with them and find out what's going on with the oysters.
And again, Jackie Soans is the Marine Reserve Research Coordinator at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory. And Eric Simons is Digital Editor at Bay Nature Magazine. And we go next to Miranda in Half Moon Bay. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, so I used to be a park ranger down at Fitzgerald Marine Reserve in Moss Beach. And we experienced the big sea star die off maybe 5 years ago or so. And after that, we experienced more mussels growing all over the tide pools just because some of the sea stars were eating the mussels and then the stars were gone. So I wondered if you could talk about how the mussel die-off maybe relate or not to the sea star die-off.
Thanks, Miranda. Jackie Soans, you were mentioning that you were actually along the coast because of sea star issues initially. So can you talk to that relationship?
Yeah. So that's a good point because they're, sea stars are voracious predators on mussels. So there can be a relationship there sometimes between how many sea stars you're seeing and how many mussels there are. In this case, as she mentioned, those two events are pretty far apart. The sea star wasting disease symptoms started showing up in, 2013 in this area. And then, the mussel die-off, of course, is just this month. I've been out doing the sea star surveys recently. That's actually following the sea star population. And, the loss of mussels could impact them. There might be fewer of them within reach, when they're looking for prey. But some of the mussels that survived are in the low intertidal zone, and that's more likely where the sea stars will be also. So I'm not sure yet. We'll actually have to follow up and see whether the mussel die-off will impact sea star predation or health.
Well, this listener writes, I hope that each of us realize our own contributions to this calamity. We drive to the beach to escape the heat we've created, and in so doing, directly contribute to our planet's rising temperatures. Is there a canary in the coal mine species for ocean environments, at least for our coastal environment? I mean, are mussels it? Are sea stars it? Are Eric Simons?
I mean, they all are in some sense,
yeah.
Right? I mean, the sea star die-off is disease-related, and I think that's a pretty active question about whether there were other factors involved in that. But, I mean, you see these sort of widespread marine die-offs from disease. You see coral bleaching. You see the mussels dying. But I also, do want to make a point that this is not entirely sort of hopeless, that there are a lot of things that are doing well now. A lot of coastal California fish, a lot of coastal California seabirds that are recovering or have recovered. And so there's a complicated you know, I don't want to give the impression that everything is in decline or that a single mass mortality is sort of the end of everything. There's a lot of complexity to it.
Well, Rebecca tweets, it's important to share your coastal observations on the Twitter account iNaturalist. That data helps us see patterns. Do you do that, Jackie Sones or Eric Simons?
So this is Jackie, yeah. I haven't been entering my observations on iNaturalist yet, mostly because I maintain a blog, The Natural History of Bodega Head, and that takes up quite a bit of my free time. So I'm doing that, you know, just in a slightly different format. But I do use iNaturalist observations in trying to understand how different marine organisms are doing, you know. And so I pay attention to what people are posting and try to track trends over time.
How about you, Eric Simons?
Yeah, I use iNaturalist constantly. And I think actually this is a great reminder that, you know, what do we need here? Which we need people at the coast observing things, right? And here is this way you can be involved. You can go to the coast. You can take pictures with your phone. You can upload it to iNaturalist. And then researchers, people like Jackie, researchers around the world can see what you're seeing. And so we need ways. I mean, this really sort of happened and helped with the SeaStar die-off.
So you're crowdsourcing here.
Exactly.
Basically.
How can you get a bunch of people out to the coast to see where the SeaStars are maybe recovering, where they're still sick? Well, you can just have everybody at the coast who has a phone take a picture while they're there. And you know, iNaturalist is a great way to sort of see what's happening.
So has this mussel die-off kickstarted anything, Jackie Sones or Eric Simons, that you know of because of concerns about what this, you know, means for the future?
Well, it's still pretty early. I wouldn't be surprised that a number of researchers, you know, pick up on this news and start to pursue, you know, questions about impacts on the intertidal system as a whole. Actually, just as an example, there are summer students in session here at the Bodega Marine Lab, and a few of those students are now really interested for their summer projects, you know, to look into, you know, possible impacts of the mussel mortality. So there are some things just starting up, and I'm assuming actually that there'll be more coming soon.
Yeah.
Eric Simons.
One of the fascinating things here for me is, you know, we have this long record of studying these things at the coast. You know, the word keystone species, that comes from sea stars eating mussels. And we have this sort of understanding of the relationship between all these things at the coast. And now we see these big die-offs, the sea stars die-off. You know, you see a smaller mussel die-off. And it's this sort of rewriting of the rules at the coast in the tide pools, and this sort of opportunity to figure out, okay, well, what's going to happen now? It's this sort of live experiment. And what you hope is that, you know, we can use it to learn more.
Well, Eric Simons, digital editor at Bay Nature Magazine, thanks for teaching us so much today. And same to you, Jackie Sones, Marine Reserve Research Coordinator at UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. Another half-hour forum is next. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us.